Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Well, welcome back to the show, everybody. We have a pretty full show, so we're going to get right into it. I just want to start with a quick recap of ClackFest. It's an amazing event, and I haven't been for a couple of years, and it's changed in a lot of ways for the better. I mean, I can't think of a way for the worse. Attendance was amazing. They're now doing a Friday start. They used to start on Saturday, well, Friday night. They have stuff happening Friday. There were demos, there were classes, there were talks. There was a fun party Friday night at the venue. They have a huge tent in case it rains, which it did. But like really fun gathering Friday night. It was nice to have camping back. Everybody camped nearby. And then Saturday morning, people, a lot of people showed up. There were events all day. There was tons of races. I competed in a bunch of them, which were really fun. And I really enjoyed the competition. There's some great boaters out there. They're doing a lot of great boating. And that led into a big event evening, an award ceremony, a massive raffle. And then just a band playing in the evening and just getting together with friends and catching up. It rained off and on all day. It was sunny at times, it was rainy at times. And in the evening, it hailed and rained hard. And I was planning to camp Saturday night, but my stuff was soaked. I did not plan on a deluge. So I bounced late Saturday night out kind of towards the end of the party. And didn't stay Saturday night, but I wish I had. I wish I could have. My stuff was so wet. But it was overall a great event. I just hope people put on the calendar for next year. It's always that third weekend in May. It's such a great way to bring together the community. And I feel like there's new people involved in organizing it and planning. And they're doing an amazing job of putting together just a fun, professional, well-run event that's very well thought out. So thank you to the organizers. There were tons of volunteers, people judging the gates, people helping the parking, people driving shuttles. And, you know, it takes a lot of volunteers. And I really appreciate all the people who come to volunteer to support the community to make it happen. And the people who organize it, they're all volunteers. Nobody's paid to organize this. So thank you to everybody who put it together. It was one of my favorite ClackFests of all time. It's technically the Upper Clackamas Whitewater Festival. But I think it's sort of getting rebranded as just ClackFest, because that's kind of what we all call it anyway. So with that, let's move on to our questions. The first one is, I just read the piece about kayaking the elk, and I've got questions. I just moved to Port Orford, and I've got a 14-foot Sotar that I'm confident with in Class 4 water. I'm planning to downsize to something I can float the elk in, as well as exploring other coastal streams and lakes. Do you think a high-side paddle cat would be appropriate for the elk? It's 58 inches wide. If so, in what months would you typically expect to be runnable? So this is referring to, I did a blog post. Let me see if I can find it. Elk River kayaking. I'm just Googling it right now for everybody. Oregon. It's a run I did, I don't know, 5, 6, 10 years ago. Here we go. Let me share this. Let me see if it'll let me. Here we go. Share screen. I'm sorry, everybody. I'm incompetent here sometimes. Share screen. There we go. Kayaking the elk. This is the article he's referring to that I wrote a number of years ago. And just sort of lays out, there weren't good descriptions of the run back then, so I felt like I needed to publish something. And it's kind of roadside. Look at it. I mean, it's stunning. I felt like it was a slightly easier Oregon Hole Gorge or South Fork Gorge. I mean, it's 11 and a half miles, so there's like mini gorges. But it's a little bit easier than the gorges on the Smith. But also pretty solid. Like there were some sweet sections of whitewater, and it's just out of Port Orford. It's a wild and scenic river. There's a lot of wilderness nearby. It's protected by a lot of wilderness. And it's like I mentioned here too, like there's a road along it, but you don't notice it. You can see I write that here. It's hardly noticeable. Kind of like the Cal Salmon. On the Cal Salmon in Northern California, there's a road there, but you just don't really notice it. It felt a lot like the Cal Salmon. You know, great little gorges. We did run into wood a few times that was kind of nasty. And then this is the beginning. This next photo is the beginning of a really cool canyon, a lower gorge. Unfortunately, it's the only photo I have. It was beautiful downstream. And, you know, I just shared, when I do this, let's say 2013, so like 13 years ago, now time is flying. So to get back to the question, let me remove this. Honestly, like, you could get a 14-foot boat down it. I feel like it had plenty of water. You could just do it higher too. It definitely flow dependent, but I think you get a 14-foot boat down it. Depends on you. It depends on your skill level, your abilities. Is it you and five people, so it's heavy, or the two people are towing it? How good are you at reading? It's just like, it depends on you. But I know I could get a 14-foot boat down it. Probably the flow we did of that. High side paddle cat would probably be great too. You wouldn't want to go too high. You want to be careful with the flows, because there were some like pretty meaty drops. I didn't have photos of a lot of the meaty drops because I was busy running them. And I didn't, you know, we weren't in like photo taking mode that day. And so high side paddle cat would actually be exciting potentially. Yeah. And remember, there's different put-ins and takeouts. So you don't have to do the whole thing at once. You could do it and you could start and stop in different places. And then what months would you typically expect it to be runnable? When it rains. It's rain fed. So, you know, anytime like November through April, rain dependent. I'm guessing we did in February. I published this thing. It looks like originally published it February 11, 2013. So we probably did like a January, early February run in the winter. But, you know, just it's rain fed. So you just got to watch the flows. But, I'm guessing it only has water to boat. I'm just guessing. I could be totally wrong here. I'm guessing 10 days a year. So you living there helps. We were in Grants Pass. I think we were supposed to do something else that day, but we got skunked for some reason. Something we wanted to do was too high or too low. And then we decided to drive over to Port Orford, which from Grants Pass, it's a solid 3+ hours to run it. But it's one of those things where when it's in, it's a rare opportunity to run it. And so we got super lucky with the water levels to have a good time. So yeah, enjoy. It's an amazing place. Oh, you asked about other stuff in the coast. Oh man, that there's so much south of you, especially. You've got the Chetco, all the Smith, you know, a little further away, the Illinois and the Rogue. But I mean, I could live in Port Orford and I can think of so many places I want to explore. You know, the Smith is just a mecca. There's like 15 different sections of river to run. But you could do the lower Chetco pretty easily, the Pistol. There's a lot down there to explore. What's that creek in Hunter? I think you paddle Hunter Creek, but there's also another river there. Maybe I'm thinking of the Pistol. There's another river down there. There's a lot. So yeah, get a map out, read some books. You'll find some cool stuff. Okay, commercial break. I do want to talk really quick. I'm going to actually do this commercial break today. So I want to talk about River Hardware really quick. This is a website we have to sell stuff. This is just stuff that we like, that we believe in, and our customer service is terrible. So our motto is, if you want customer service, go to NRS. I finally am stocking knives. It's been really hard to find a way to source knives to sell in a store, but I really feel like I want to sell the knives people should have. This is the place to know that what we offer is good. And I think the best go-to river knife is the Gerber Easy Out Rescue Knife. I just think it's the best for the price. It's $51. It's affordable. It's solid, long serrated edge. This is it. We finally carry it. Pretty soon we're going to carry three knives. But I there's only four knives I think that most boaters should even think about. The Bear Claw, which we're going to get soon. There's this. There's the Spyderco version of the Gerber Easy Out, the Spyderco Atlantic Salt, which is just an expensive version of the Gerber. And then the Walker knife, which I just played with, and it's amazing. We're not going to carry it because I don't think he wholesales them, but I'm going to carry three of those four. So if you're looking for River Knife, just so you all know, we're going to have them available at River Hardware. All right, end of commercial. Let's move on. Teaching opportunity. Okay, this is a good one. Saw this video of folks at Bedrock, seemed like a good learning opportunity. So this is somebody who just sent me a video that they wanted to meet a review, basically, to share some thoughts. So I'm going to add that video now. We'll watch it. I'm going to give my commentary. This is where I can make people mad. So I got to be a little bit careful because people get upset when I review their video and share my thoughts. But I was asked to do it, and I feel like it's an opportunity to like watch some video and talk about it. In the comments, if you have thoughts, please add them. The first thing I noticed right away, the first thing I'm always looking at is people's setup. Looks like they're both wearing good PFDs. They're both wearing helmets for a rapid like Bedrock. Pretty smart. The oar length looks correct. right? It looks like, you know, the right oars for the boat. He's noticed he's using oar rights. Super smart, especially if you're not super experienced. Just have those oars. Don't worry about them spinning. I'm having oar rights this week, and everything just looks cleanly rigged. I'm not seeing like a disaster. From what I can see, it's pretty cleanly rigged. Because I really appreciate that. And I'm gonna turn the volume down. Oh, there's audio. So what I can tell right away is he's trying to downstream ferry, which is the cheat code for the Grand Canyon is downstream ferrying. So like you can tell his stern is pointed towards the bank and downstream of the bow, and he's looking and thinking about pulling downstream. So he's attempting the downstream ferry, which is the easiest way to run bedrock, but he hits a ladder and gets spun. And that's a common thing when you're trying to downstream ferry is you lose your angle. You need to fix your angle. So he's trying to fix his angle. There you go. Gets it back. Now, then he pops an oar. So I think he would have been great. Right, let's watch this popping the oar. So as he's fixing it, let's watch this again. This is really interesting. Trying to downstream ferry. A really experienced boater would have anticipated that spin coming and counteracted ahead of time. So it's okay. He fixes his angle, which is great, but drops that oar deep. And this is a common issue with rowing. You got to watch your downstream oar. And so this is so important because this downstream oar can also hit you in the head. It can hit you in the body. It can cause a lot of damage to a person. It's also a great way to break an oar. And if these were NRS oar locks right there, the oar is about to slip out of that Cobra. I think they have Cobra oar locks. That's what it looks like. If this was an NRS oar lock, this would probably likely be a broken oar. The NRS brass doesn't bend like right there, the Sawyer ones do. So it bent, it let the oar out. So the oar didn't break, which is great news. And it's still tied to the boat. So he went to go row with one boat. With one oar, this is hard to do. You really honestly cannot do much with one oar. Like it's you think you might be able to, but you're just gonna spin in circles. So at this point, I would not personally. If you guys are looking for feedback, once you lost the oar, let's go back. Boom, turning, put that oar deep, hit the downstream oar. The first thing you want to do is get your oar back. You need your oar. You just aren't useful without the oar. And I'm pretty sure we'll find out later, because I did watch this video earlier, the oar's still attached. Like, ignore your left oar for now. Or have your passenger get that oar or get the spare oar. You have time. You're pretty far to the right. You have time to make this move. It seems like you don't, but get that oar. Either the oar that came off, which is the easiest because it's just tied on, or the spare. So the passenger goes to get it. Let's see how he does. He needs to get the oar. Like, there we go. Get that oar. Reach over. And I think they, at this point, see, like, I don't know what he's trying to do there. Like, pushing on that oar isn't going to help. And he goes pretty far left, which for most people are hitting the rock. This is an immediate flip, a violent flip. They don't flip. Which is great. That's much better than not flip than flipping. And you can see the oar is dangling there. It's not that hard to get this oar. This is almost something worth practicing. Look how if they had done that exact thing up above, they would have made the rapid. Like, oar comes out, get your oar back, like right away. Of course, this is taking a little bit because of that. Looks like that ropey thing is tangled. Oh, it looks like it broke even. What? Wait, why did he throw the oar away? Was it broken? Wait a minute. What? I didn't see this. I watched it kind of quickly earlier. Okay, that is a perfectly good oar. Why? Oh, the blade broke. Wait, I think the blade broke. Oh, yeah, the blade broke. Okay, got it. Yep, classic. Downstream oar, you're going to break it. So, like, it still will kind of work. It's better than nothing, but I'm not sure I would throw it. Interesting. I think I would set it inside the. That's hard to say what I would do. Would I throw it? I don't know. Good question. Anyway, broken blade. So he's getting it untied, unclipped from the thingy. Throwing, I think he's just going to end up back in the Yeti. And now getting the spare oar, which if you have it rigged in a way, it's pretty quick. It goes on pretty fast, right? Oh, it's funny. I hit the GoPro. Slide it in. You're ready to go. Okay, now this eddy, I've been a part of this. We had a boat get stuck in this eddy once. The boat flipped and was just doing circles in the eddy. It's hard to get out of this eddy. Like, it's not an easy task. And now you're running the left side of bedrock, which does also like to flip boats. So this is kind of terrifying. You have to make this difficult move and try not, and knowing you're likely going to flip, which is a bummer. So I do like, I don't know what they're doing right now, but I do like that they're taking their time. Like, okay, cool. Calm down. Two of us are in the boat. We're breathing. We have our oar. There's nothing to rush. He's like just being very relaxed. I love this. Some people will be freaking out like they're in a hurry to get down this. This is where, yeah, pushing is not going to make it. Yeah, and I think you could flip on this rock too. I'm not sure about that, but I think you could. But he's got to get out of the eddy. That's the key. And I remember watching this go on for a while. Yeah. I'm going to fast forward a little bit. So to leave an eddy, you're going to want to – the easiest way to leave this eddy in particular is he wants to push really bad, it looks like. What's going on? Is he trying to push to leave the eddy? Okay, he's pulling downstream right now. I think – what is going on here? So you basically – I mean, let me say what you want to do. You want to do the complete opposite of this. So he's pulling downstream, and at this angle, it's going to be hard to cross the eddy line. He wants to pull upstream, put his stern out, and kind of ferry out in the current. I'm not sure if that makes sense or not, but I would turn this boat around 180 degrees right now, pull upstream, put the stern out in the current, and hold that angle to ferry out. Trying to cross the eddy line like this, you just can't cross the eddy line. The current won't let you. You have to be at an angle to the current. If those of you that know how to leave an eddy really well, it's probably super obvious to you. If you're learning, it might be hard to understand what I'm saying. But I would turn that boat around. Let's see. So we go, this is the right thing. He's the stern is upstream. He's going to start pulling on the oars, get that stern across the eddy line. And you're going to want to really yard on the right oar. Oh, he's lost his angle. Now the stern's pointed. Oh, there's the oar at the top of the eddy. Now his stern's pointed downstream. He's got to cross that eddy line. He just went up to it. And that oar that he threw in the water is going to stay there for a very long time. Like the oar he threw in the water, he's not getting back. All right, so he's back in here. Let's fast forward a little bit more. Going to the top. Okay, so again, you want to be pulling upstream at about 45 degree angle to the eddy line. And now he's 90, which is not going to work. And now he's less than 90. And just as, by the way, there's the, if you haven't seen, the oar is right there. The oar is hanging out right there, floating the eddy. That oars, they're not going to get it back. Somebody will get it back someday. And again, you just can't cross the eddy line. He's still on eddy line. And does he get out? But he gets out. And somehow hits this wall. Does he hit the wall? So it wants to slam you into this wall. It's hard to avoid this. But doesn't hit him too, and he doesn't flip, which is great. I'm going to also, I think, the big learning point to me, and this is so there's this like river running mnemonic. I always forget what you call it. CLAP: communication, line of sight, avoidance, position of maximum usefulness. Those people on the rock are pretty useless. I just don't see what value they create. They're standing with throw bags. you just cannot hit a person swimming in that kind of current. They won't be aware. Like, they need to be downstream for if this boat flips. If this boat had flipped there, all these people are on this rock and they have to run to this raft and then go chase it. This raft, in my opinion, the position of maximum usefulness is downstream for when the raft flips, then to help out. Right? The people standing on the rock are not really that useful. And I don't see any boats downstream. Now, maybe I'm missing something. Sorry, if that boat, oh man, we started. Let's look at the view downstream. If that boat had flipped, they would right now be floating upside down and there's no downstream safety, right? There's no catcher's mitt for them. The people on the island have to all regroup, get together, and being on that rock, in my opinion, is not very useful. Okay, sweet. Those are my thoughts about that video. Oh, there's a lot of comments. Okay, here we go. Clockfest was a blast. Yeah, sweet. Yeah, good. Thanks for being there too. That was sweet. Matt Katamiba says, I hate how he just tosses garbage. Yeah, just, I agree. I don't think he tossed his garbage. I think he maybe thought it would go downstream, but I could tell. I had a feeling when he did that, I wasn't going to do that. Also, when you're in the eddy, you probably have tons of time to mess with the oars. You don't need to be rushing to this rescue. Yeah, once you're in the eddy, you can just chill. Like, relax a little bit. You're in the eddy. Yeah, he could have just, like, I would have tied the oar on the side. You have time. Just tie the oar on the side. Deal with it. Good point. Yep. That's the first thing I said. I'm glad they're wearing helmets. Okay, I'm going to put the comments up on the screen, too. People like that. Okay, moving on to – cool. That's the end of – the questions. I just had two questions this week. I do want to finish by talking about the NADA Wilderness Coalition and their recent common courtesies. And this NADA Wilderness Coalition was started by a Middle Fork outfitter who I think has had some frustration with the use of technology on trips. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think that that's the case. I know I've had some frustration with the use of technology on trips. I'm not somebody who's really strict about some things. I'm more practical. So I think some people are really frustrated with people having phones on trips and saddle and being able to text. And I recognize that that's annoying. And I think people should get away from their phones. I don't text from trips. Like I make an effort. I don't want to text with trips. But I also, like, if people want to, I'm just like, I don't know, do your thing. It's not something I'm frustrated by. And so although I don't personally want to use a texting device in the wilderness, I'm okay with other people do. I prefer if they didn't do it around me. I prefer if they didn't do it in the chair circle. I think that that's a little disrespectful. But I'm also like, you know, it is what it is. Like, it's a new technology. It exists. So, like, I don't like these things in wilderness. It's a thing I don't like. But I also understand that people want to use them. And more I'm seeing our commercial guests and just friends like clip their little garment onto their jacket or their belt and walk around texting people. I think it's weird personally, but I grew up on river trips in an era where you just didn't do that. It just wasn't a thing. I could see if your first wilderness experience is having a texter was part of your experience, like not having, just wanting to text people. I don't know. I don't want to know what happened in the real world personally. I want to have time away from all that. I also don't want to force my thinking on other people. Hopefully that makes a little bit of sense. Oh, here we go. Here's a comment. Taking my first trip with a Starlink in June. I get why people don't like it. I don't get why people attack others, not even on the trip. Yeah. So like we had a trip recently on the Rogue where one of our commercial trips, the first one I know of our trips, where one of the guests brought a Starlink and a laptop and would go to their tent and do work in the evenings. I think that's weird. I just think that's weird. Personally, I think that's weird. I also recognize that in this new world, where, I mean, I work very hard. I have to work very hard. A lot of people do. In this new world, this person may not have been able to go on the trip without doing that. Like, it's not like they're, hopefully they're not in their tent, like looking at porn or something. Like they actually have to go to a meeting or turn something in or sign a contract. You know, hopefully it's not just like, oh, I need the internet while I'm out here. So like, to me, it is weird. You can't get away from it for 4 days, 5 days, whatever. That trip was 5 days. But I'm also respectful that people are different than me, even though I think it's weird. I don't judge the person. It's just like, okay, that's what you're doing. They did offer the Wi-Fi password to other people on the trip. And I, as I understand it, everybody, I think, turned it down, which is great. I think that we, as a people that go on trips, there are people that will want this stuff and need this stuff for whatever reason. I think most people don't want it because they do want to get away and just enjoy the wilderness and nature. So I think there are some people who are very strict that are like, no, no devices, no internet, no communication. I think I personally want that, but I want to respect people who do want to have those things. Hopefully that makes sense. I'm kind of blabbing on a little bit. Here we go. Let's see. So that's my situation. Member's kid is graduating. Yeah. I mean, it's like you can only go if you're at the graduation. Like you otherwise could not go. I get it. I'm not sure if I personally would not do that. I personally, like, I'm a, but if you want to do that, it's not it, like, do it. Like, it's not something I would do, but I don't want to judge or force my feelings about what a wilderness trip is on you. And if it's whether you get to go or not, like, cool. Like, I'm going to try to respect that. Even though I think a Garmin and casings go sideways, being able to truly unplug is my favorite part of multi-day trips. No judgment on others. Yeah, just enjoy the road. Yeah, yep. I bring a Garmin now too. And it's for emergencies. I don't use it. I don't want to be texting home every day. And I've been on a lot of trips where somebody texts home every – no, sorry, I've been on the trip. I've been in the office where somebody's texting home every night, and then one night they don't because they start to unplug. They just want to talk to people and just like – enjoy the experience. And then people at home are then worried for their safety. Like, oh, you know, so-and-so texted every night, but on night four, they didn't text. Should we send in a helicopter? And that is a little bit of a problem because I feel like people then expect communication. So I don't communicate because I know that I won't remember to do it every night. And then that's one of the reasons I don't. I also just don't want to. I want to like hang out with people I'm with, go to bed, you know, listen to the river, wake up, listen to birds, right? Okay. Anyway. Oh, Grand Canyon. Yeah, I mean, oh, yeah. In your situation, yeah, that's it. It's not just like a four-day road trip. It's like a lifetime experience. And all you have to do is bring a Starlink and watch a graduation video. That's an interesting one. It's an interesting one. Lots of comments. Man, I'm not going to get to the common courtesies. It's rough because a lot of people don't know how addicted they are to technology until they, yeah. It's totally true. I mean, me too. Like I think we're not addicted is a word, or are we just like phones and technology? Phones are becoming just part of who we are as people. That's just the reality. Like, you know, if I go to wait in line at the UPS store, I'm going to bring my phone because I don't want to stand there bored looking at people. Like, I'm like, oh, I'm going to scroll or something. If I go for a bike ride now, I'm usually listening to a podcast on through my phone. So I know I use my phone a lot, and you know, we're all sort of used to having it and having constant communication with our friends and our peers. People learn during the trips how valuable, yeah, but it's hard to convince them to go with it. Yeah. Yeah. People learn how nice it is not to have their phones, but it's hard to convince them not to bring them. I mean, I definitely bring my phone even on day trips. It's my camera. I might take some notes. I use the notepad all the time. I used to carry a notepad on my PFD. Now I take notes on my phone. But also, like, it's an emergency. I have satellite communication. So I could, if I was hiking and somebody had a heart attack, I have it with me to make that emergency call versus running back to camp to get the Garmin. So there's a lot of value that phones bring, but I don't think I use it for like goofing off during the trip or like, I don't know. I'm not checking things. And trip plan before, yeah. I mean, that's a tough one. Okay, let's get to these common courtesies. I think this is like a lot of things. It's worth having a conversation about. It's worth us talking about. And when I have conversations, I learn and my opinion changes. Like, I'm not steadfast in my opinion. Like, you could make an argument where like I'd be like, yeah, oh no, we should have our phones with us. We should have internet. You could make the, and I could, if you made a good argument, I'd be like, okay, no, I get it. That makes sense. I could also, somebody could make the argument like phones should never be allowed on river trips. And if you made a good, like if you presented some ideas to me I never thought of, it might change my opinion. My opinion is not stuck in stone or how I feel about things as a person. Like I'm always trying to get more information and learn. And so that's the goal of like sharing this as a conversation. And Steve, who worked on this for a long time, I think he went into it with one idea, but then had an open mind in a lot of conversations and morphed into what we're about to read. And so this was developed in Idaho. You can see the Middle Fork Outfitter Association, Salmon River Outfitter Association, the National Forest, the Idaho Outfitter Guides, and Idaho Woodman Association, kind of like all their names are on there. So they must have approved it. I think these are good courtesies for all river runners of wilderness or all wilderness users. And there aren't really many rules or guidelines about this out there. So it's amazing we have this. And my guess is this will change and evolve over time. My guess, this isn't just set in stone. The wording will change, but let's go through them real quick. Respect the experience others are trying to have. I think that's just the overall thing. If you want to use your Starlink, cool. But when you turn on Wi-Fi and then allow people to log on, you might change the experience they plan to have. By giving them the Wi-Fi, you might be like, it might be too much for them to say no to. And so, and there's a lot of examples. This is important. I think that's the overall thing. Just if you want to ruin your experience, that's one thing. If you ruin other people's experience, that's another thing. I think that's the case with the last one is like amplified music. That's not respecting other people's experience. When you play, when you're blasting music, even if nobody's around, you don't know nobody's around. I've been hiking the trail on the Rogue and heard a raft blasting music while I'm hiking. You might not see river runners, but there are people hiking near you that it's not respectful of the experience others are trying to have. I mean, I think that's the overall thought. Keep your use of technology limited to private spaces, which I think to me means like, if you're going to use Starlink, go to your tent. If you're going to be in your phone and watch a movie or something, go to your tent. Please don't do it out in front of everybody. It just takes away. Like when you're sitting with people and you're not engaging with them, it's awkward. Don't expect technology to eliminate the risks of wilderness. Yeah, I think that's this one's alluding to, just because you have a Garmin doesn't mean like you're safe, right? Like being in the wilderness is still risky. You need to still be careful and cautious and thoughtful. And your phone or your Garmin could not work when you try to get emergency to come out and get you. So please don't be riskier just because you can call somebody to help. Also, when you call somebody to help, that's usually like a helicopter. It's putting their lives in risk going into the wilderness. It's a lot of expense. Okay. Know and follow the rules and ethos of the Wilderness Act. Awesome. Use airplane mode. Avoid geotagging or live streaming. This is interesting. Use airplane mode. I think most, I know I do is say battery. Avoid geotagging or live streaming. Live streaming in wilderness, that's one thing I would say we shouldn't allow. Like live streaming in wilderness, that's insane. If I was, the king of the US, I would say no live streaming. I would just make that a rule. That's crazy to me. Geotagging, even if you're in airplane mode, I think it still geotags the photos. But it's helpful to not like, that's a tough one. I don't completely understand. So saying don't tag your photos or your location or don't actively post the best spots. That's interesting. Respect EMS, emergency medical services, SAR, search and rescue, and the risks they take during rescue. That to me goes to the don't expect technology to eliminate the risks of wilderness. If you are taking risks bigger than you should because you know you can be saved, that's sort of disrespectful of EMS and search and rescue. They to come and get you, they are also taking risks. I like that one. Be present while in wilderness, enjoy a real companionship. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the general idea. I'm gonna take these comments off. While in the wilderness, no news is good news. I agree. That's just something I think about. Like when I go on a river trip, in the summer I'm managing a rafting company, and when I go on a trip, things can go wrong. And on my other trips, like there could be serious problems happening on other trips that I'm on. And I question whether I want that news or not know it. But if you don't have, like, if you don't have news about what's happening in your job, in the outside world, let's just assume that's good news. It's not always the case, though. But, like, if people need to find you to get you some information, we do it the old school way, which is, you know, like, fly somebody in to stop you when you float by, I think not feeling like you need to communicate out with the real world is the point of this. And I think it's a good one. Respect the special night skies, limit electronic lighting. Yeah, there is more electronic lighting than ever. It's cool and it's over the top sometimes. And so I like this one. Be thoughtful about electronic lighting. And this next last one's my kind of pet peeve. Respect the peace. Keep electronic sounds to yourself. I think it's weird when you're in a wilderness area, in a beautiful place, trying to enjoy yourself, and you float by somebody, or somebody floats by you, or you float by a camp where music is blasting. It goes back to the first one. It's just disrespectful to users who don't want to listen to your music. So I think if you are listening to music, first of all, blasting it is kind of disrespectful, like loud. But when you see other groups, at least turn it down or turn it off. I think that's the respectful thing to do. Anyway, I think this is cool. I know how much work Steve put into putting this together, and it covers so many different things beyond just like whether or not to bring your phone, and so many things to think about. And I think it's a good guideline. And I think that he's making a big effort to not be like heavy-handed or like, this is how you got to do it. There's called common courtesies. If you want to be respectful to people and follow common courtesies, do it. If you don't care, don't do it. Like, you're not going to get a ticket. Like, these are just the way we should treat people respectfully in wilderness, coming from somebody in a group of people. The Not a Wilderness Coalition is a group of people that spend a lot of time in wilderness, who have talked to other people who have spent a lot of time in the wilderness, and kind of through all these conversations come up with what they think are common courtesies. If you disagree with one, cool, disagree with it. That's up to you. But I think that this is a good list of things that we could follow to be respectful to each other. Okay, one more comment, and then here we go. I'm part of the problem. I would probably watch a live stream of LOP. Oh, man. Yeah, what if somebody was on the Grand Canyon and live? See, to me, that is a slippery slope. As soon as you can live stream lava, like, you can what that does is it has people out there being the influencers. Like, and it's just like camera. It's weird. It's weird to think that like people would be out there with like selfie sticks. It definitely changes the experience. Now, I can tell you all, in 100 years, the way the world's moving, that's probably what's going to be happening. As somebody who grew up before phones, I mean, out to college before cell phones, like, I didn't have one until I was probably, I don't know, mid to late 20s. I think it's really weird, the idea of live streaming wilderness. But I'd be interested to talk to people who think it's okay. Like, I might just be, you know, old and, you know, crusty and like, can't do that. But I think it's really weird. And what do you think about using, this is a question, what do you think about using apps that use GPS for guidance? My mom's a longtime guide, and she was using an app that said how many miles it was to camp. I think that's fine. I promote one. I mean, I one of the sponsors of our show is the Go Rafting app. I think it's really nice, actually. Like, It there's something about, I mean, it's, to me, it's not that different from a map, the way I think of it. There's something beautiful about not even having a map, but the rivers, everybody wants to do the Middle Fork, the Rogue, the Selway, the Gates of Lodore, the Grand, the same, like those like 10 rivers, right? That everybody wants to do. And although a lot of those rivers go through wilderness, you know, it's because there's so many people that go down them, it's not a true wilderness experience, because there are other user interactions. There's only so many camps for the people that are there. You know, to me, like, if I have maybe some time coming off here pretty soon, I'm trying to think of what I would do. The last thing I'm going to do, you know, personally, is go to the Rogue or the Middle Fork, because I do it for work. So that's one reason. But like right now, there's a river in Northeast Oregon flowing, the Minim, which you hike in 5 miles, and it's like a 2-3 day trip after that. And there's a way to hike in higher and do some class four. Like to me, and there's no map. Like that to me is a true wilderness experience, right? Like let's go somewhere where we probably won't see anybody on the whole trip, right? We probably won't see anybody, and there's no map, and we're just gonna camp. We're just gonna find a place that looks good and camp. So like if like for me, in the style of trip I personally like to do, I'd love to go out like 3 or 4 friends and some pack rafts, some duckies, some hard shells, maybe a light raft, and let's go run some random river in the middle of nowhere and figure it out. That's my thing of fun. I know a lot of people, what's fun for them is to do like a class 3 float that flows in the summer, that's reliable. They can bring their 15-foot raft. And like that, unfortunately, there's a limited number of those rivers. And so because of that, we need maps. Sorry, I just was like, my brain was just thinking and I was talking about a lot of thoughts I have. So that was kind of a weird tangent. But it's a long way of saying like we kind of do – for all these rivers that are really popular, and the rivers that are popular, again, they have reliable flows in the summer and are class 3, right? People want reliable flows so they can plan their trip. They want to go in the summer, June, July, August, when because it's warm. And it needs to be like usually class 3 or 4. Like it's not, if it's easier, it's not fun. It's too boring. If it's too hard, it's too dangerous. So there's this like narrow window of like class 3, 4 that's like, you know, 2+, 3+, 4, that's like the right amount of challenging, but not boring and not too hard, right? That's where everybody's trying to go at the same time. And so those rivers are, they're managed, like the rivers allow basically as many people as the corridor can handle, which has campsites sort of maxed out. And because of that, we kind of need maps to know where the camps are so we can have a camping spot. Okay, that was a lot of weird tangents. Okay, one more person. I think it's the last comment. It won't be much longer until everybody's cell phone will be connected to satellites and there will be no dead zones for service. It will be more of a conscious choice to disconnect and be present. Yeah, I agree. I've been on, you know, we do it in our Bhutan trip. We get service because, you know, the whole country's covered. They never did wired phones. They just went straight to cell. So like, and the Bhutan really wants like rural areas to have coverage. Like there's villages, like we float by villages on our trips, and the government wants even the villages to have cell coverage. I think it's like a, they just feel like it's important. So on our overnight trip, we do both the overnight trips we've done, there's cell coverage, and the people just leave their phone in their tent and hang up by the fire. I think people will make a conscious choice. I think that's what I've seen so far. I think people want to get out in the woods and don't want to be looking at their phones. So, but again, you know, and like, I think sometimes what's going to happen 50 years from now? We're probably all going to have like glasses that have the internet, and we're probably going to become like androids. Like maybe we're just so connected to our technology. It's just part of who we are. And maybe we will experience life in the future through technology. That's possible. And to go out away from it would seem insane. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen 50 years from now. I think 2 years from now is what Jagster's talking about. You know, it won't be much longer until everybody has internet. 2 years from now, we'll have to make conscious choices. I think people will now, because I see them doing it. I see them when they have the option. Like the road trip I talked about, one of the guests offered Wi-Fi. People just said, no, I'm here to just like interact, talk to people, be in the woods, get away, right? And so I think people will in the short term. I think like long term, as a society, if we go down this path, I just think that we're all like becoming semi-robot, like we're like a person, but we're gonna have some, our connection to technology will be crazy addictive, crazy valuable. Like yeah, I think we'll live life through technology potentially in the future. Yeah, I've seen Idiocracy. Yeah, I have. Is that what happens there? Do they all get it? I forget. I've only seen it once. It's been a long time, but remember it was weird. Okay, well, that's my thoughts. Hope you all enjoyed these common courtesies and think it's a useful thing. If you have thoughts about them, positive, negative, leave a comment. I'm super curious how people take these. I feel like everybody's like, yeah, this is all basic stuff. But I know some people feel passionately that they should be able to blast music. And so, or whatever. So if you have more thoughts, leave them in the comment section at the bottom of the video. And that's it for this episode. Probably see you next week.